Are you ready to advance your career, hone your skills, or explore new vocational paths without spending thousands of dollars to further your education? Skillfeed.com features over 65,000 video tutorials to keep your creative and technical skills current. Choose from long courses or short tutorials called Skill Snacks, featuring courses on business, web development, education, finance, leadership, photography, and more. Get your 30-day free trial now. Log on to skillfeed.com/radio. That's skillfeed.com/radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, brothers and sisters, and welcome once again to the PRX table. Thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to just have a seat with us and just engage with us with some just important dialogue. So tonight we're having a conversation which really is a continuation from last week's show, which was Set Your House in Order. And tonight we're really going to be focusing on the question, where do we begin on this road to economic recovery? Everybody knows by now that the government shutdown is over, but what's next for you? What's next for your church? Is it back to business as usual? Are there some things that you need to put in place? All these things we think are really good and valid questions for what we believe is such a time as this. So tonight, before we go any further, we just want to acknowledge the other hosts of this show, Brother Warren Feaster and Sister Dia Sanders. Sister Dia, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fine. I'm just glad to be here, really looking forward to the show on tonight. So
yes, yeah. We are. Yes, we are. And thank you for just always being so diligent. And Brother Feaster, the other great host of this show, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm feeling like Luther Vandross and Bad Boys. Oh, yeah. Well, all right. I'm feeling good today.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Brother, I did not know you had that in you. I really didn't know you had that in you. Oh, my goodness. Well, let me just tell everybody where we're at tonight. Tonight, we're going to try to do two segments. So in the first segment, we're going to just, as I said earlier, we're going to talk about or have a continuation that focused on the topic from last week, which was set your house in order. And by house, we're meaning the house as the church. If you was with us last week, you recall that we talked about this notion of a house being not just your individual house, but the other house was the church house. So, again, the church house is where we're going to focus our attention on tonight, not so much your individual house. And when we say church, let me say we're talking about that individual place where you go, that place where I go, whether it's on Sunday, Saturday, Wednesday, Tuesday, the place where you go, where you're going to be with God, you're going to be with others as well, and doing it in a spirit of community. So, again, notice that I'm talking about the church as a place where you go and what you do in that institution of church. And as far as the people and believers, just know I'm not talking about churchgoers. I'm talking about people that's really, really serious about God's business. So, with that, if you are just joining us and you want to already kick it off and have some type of conversation or comments, we welcome you. Just press 1 on your dial pad. You can also follow us on Facebook, which is possessions.resources.finances. If you go to that page, we would love for you to like our page. And we have the link that's there, and you can just join us and just post your questions there. And Brother Feaster will definitely do all he can to answer every single one of your questions. I'm putting you out there like that today, bro. All right. Sister Dia, maybe we'll start off with you this evening. I know last week we came from the book of 2 Kings chapter 20. Verses 1 through 3, and we had that as our foundation for setting your house in order. So just start us off this evening, wherever God has on your heart and wherever you want to go, starting us off.
I just, to kind of bring in what we're getting ready to go into, I think it's very pertinent and always important that we start with self. it's very easy to get lost and to lose focus because of everything else that's going on around you. And a lot of times we get so distracted, we get so, just taken off track about what's going on in the outside world that we never take, it takes us a long time to shift the focus back onto us. And, you know, the Bible talks about how easy it is for us to tell people what's wrong with them and to point out all of their faults and their weaknesses, but then to forget that there's a beam that's in our eye. And so one of the things I think, you know, when you're looking at Hezekiah and his relationship and with God was that God shifted the focus back to Hezekiah. And it literally meant that he had to look at himself. And sometimes we don't want to look at ourselves because Avery Sunshine has a song, "There's an Ugly Part of Us." And as long as we can look at everybody else and the ugly parts of them, we never have to worry about the ugly parts of us. We can just keep going on through life as if we have it all together, when the reality is that we don't. So I think it's always important that we definitely in this setting can talk about us and where we are in our houses, in our temples, and to challenge ourselves to not always be so quick to look at everybody else, but look at what we're doing and look at what we're not doing. What are our fears? What are our insecurities? What things pique our interest? What are some areas in our lives that we really need to focus on? Do I talk too much? Do I talk too little? Am I timid? Am I shy? Or am I assertive? Do I have compassion? Do I have love? Am I patient? And so when we can look at those things, then I think that is at that point that, one, we show God that we're serious about improving who we are, and then we have something to work with. We have something that we can offer other people, and that is the authentic us. And so if we always focus on other people, we can never really give people who we really are. So it was very important, you know, looking at with the government shutdown, where did Adia fit in? What was Adia going through? What was Adia doing? Is Adia self-aware about who she is so that she can help somebody else? Or is she in denial about who she is so much to the point that she can't help anybody because she fully does not really understand who she is? So getting my house in order meant that I had to look inwardly at Adia and not be so quick to look at everybody else and what they were or were not doing, but seeing how I fit into the puzzle and just looking at, you know, how we are all are a part of the body of Christ. But I have a specific role and job that I am supposed to play so that the body can do what it needs to do, and that is to continue to worship and to praise God, not just in the spiritual aspect, but also in the natural, by my giving, by my doing, by me being able to pray for others and to see a need and to fill a need. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. You know, one thing I think that was really important about what you said was about not pointing out the weakness in another, but looking at self. And I want people to take that into consideration as we continue the conversation tonight, that this is not about me talking about your church, as if your church is not doing what your church is supposed to be doing, what your church house is called to do. What I'm proposing is you talk about what your church is doing. You talk about what your church house is doing. I think there's enough people that are already out there that have enough negative things to say about the church, that have enough negative things to say about what the body of Christ is not doing. We're not even playing that game tonight. We're focusing on what are some things that we can do in our church houses to set our house in order, to make ourselves and put ourselves in a better position for people that need to come to us for help when they need help. So I'm glad you brought that out, that, again, it's not about, Sister Dea, pointing fingers at other people and pointing out their weaknesses. It's about looking at self. So, and the other thing I like what you said was we got to show God that we're serious. We have to show God. I agree wholeheartedly with that statement that you just made. We have to show God that we're serious. So with that, you know, Brother Feaster, last week, I don't remember if it was within the sermon that you preached to us or if it was a part of some other wisdom that you gave us in another comment, but you had said something to the effect that, and this is what I recall, Hezekiah had something that he had that he was able to go to God with, or something that he was able to go to God and work with. I don't want to mess it up too bad, but can you expound or get me straight on what it was that you said? Because I think it was profound, and I think it really kind of helped set the foundation for tonight's show as well.
Yeah, I actually intended to listen to the show again, but work permitted did not allow me to take the opportunity to look at it, listen to it again. But I do remember exactly what you're talking about when we were talking about 2 Kings chapter 20, and we was looking at the actually we were looking at first five verses. But the comment you're talking about is in verse 2 when it says, "Then he turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying," and then he talked about, well, only read verse 3 because it ties in. "Remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth with a loyal heart and have done what was good in your sight." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. And what I was talking about was, matter of fact, I asked the question, you know, what's your resume? You know, what when God comes to you and give you a word, what do you have to give back to God? You know, a lot of times we're, you know, I've heard the cliche years and years and years, and it actually took years for me to understand. And I heard the cliche that was said, you know, if you're waiting on God, but God is waiting on you. And it took years for me to understand that. And it was a guy that was preaching. He was having a pastoral conference in our district, and the guy was preaching, and he was preaching about when Paul was in prison and he was chained to a guard on both sides, and he was in the prison and cell was locked and the gates were locked. And God woke Paul up. And God loosed the shackles from the guards on Paul. But then God told Paul, "Fasten your sandals." And then God opened the gates and all of that like that. But the point that he made out that I want to say was, God is not going to do anything that we're capable of doing. He's already got us. Yeah, God is not going to do anything that we're capable of doing. He's already given us the, like, for example, people pray all the time, and I'm going to convict myself after I say this part. People pray all the time, "Lord, bless the people in the hospital. Bless the orphans. You know, go through the highways and the byways." But that's our job. God is not going to do that when that's what he told us to do. And I find myself, I get up every morning and I read my Bible. That's my one-on-one time with God. And I remember praying the prayer for a long time. "Lord, open my eyes that I might see, open my ears that I might hear, open my heart that I might receive." And one day I actually listened to what I said, and ever since then I catch myself and I make sure that I say, "Lord, I'm going to open my eyes that I may see. I'm going to open my ears that I may hear. I'm going to open my heart that I may receive. I ask that you meet me in the pages." And so a lot of times when we go to God with these things, we're not taking what we have to God. God said, "Moses, what is that you got in your hand?" Moses said, "All I have is a rock. I mean, all I have is this rod." God said, "What do you have?" The disciples said, "Well, all we have is two fish and five loaves of bread." We think what we bring to God is so simple, so small, but God takes what we have and uses it. But we have to bring it to him. A lot of times we're sitting, you know, I'm sitting and waiting on a job. Well, the paper's outside. You got to go through the classified. You got to do your part. And so when we talk about, you know, when I was talking about what is your resume, what are you bringing to God? What, I mean, just like think about a regular resume that we do when we're looking for a job. It tells of our work experience. It tells of our skills. It tells of our education. You know, it tells of even our references. So when we go before God, what skills are we bringing? What references are we bringing? You know, what work experience are we bringing? And even people that don't know God, never knew of God, still have stuff that they can bring to God. The Bible tells a story, and I got worked up and caught up already. The Bible tells a story of the man that did not fear God, but he didn't worship God, but he feared God, and he built the temple for the Jews. He didn't even worship God. But what he did, he respected God enough, or the Jews enough, or their God, that he put in work. You know, so a lot of times it's what we bring. The question on the floor is, what do we bring? And, J.R., that's why I like, and you really, it took you months for it to sink in with me, but that's why I like when you tell me all the time, we can easily talk about the problems.
Mm-hmm.
But when are we going to talk about not the solutions, but what we are going to do? You know, it's easy to say, you know what, the government shut down and now I'm out of a check. It's easy to say, well, the government is finally back up and now I can go back to work. But what are we doing? In the meantime, what do we do? I said I was going to wait a little while, but during this shutdown, you was talking all this bad stuff about the government and you don't like the politicians and everybody want to clean out Washington. How many people went and registered to vote? How many people made sure they find out when the next election is coming up? How many people wrote their congressman? How many people did anything? This is the time where we activate, we do something about it. And a lot of times we didn't do anything. So the question on the floor is, what are we doing? There's always something that we can do. Gerald, you talked about a long time ago, and we talked about there are, you know, there are things that we have that we can do stuff with. When we first started out and we talked about 2 Kings, and I always look around my apartment, I'm thinking there's so much stuff in here that I can just get rid of, all these books that I have read and don't want to read again. Donate them to the library. Give them away. You know, and that's what are we doing in the meantime, in the between time? What are we doing with the resources that we have, with the capabilities we have, with the things that we have? And that right there is what we're talking about. I'm sorry. I got all worked up already earlier in the show.
Well, just like I said, I knew it was going to be good, and I knew that you were ready to come out the gate, so I had to do my part and give you that space. For those of you who are just joining us, we're talking tonight. Tonight's show, actually, the title is From Shutdown to Recovery, and really what we're having is a part two discussion of our conversation from last week, which was Set Your House in Order. And we're talking about it from the standpoint of the house not being your individual house. Tonight we're talking about house being the church house. So what we want to do is, and what we're aiming to do tonight is to just start giving some thoughts or giving some ideas to what you can do at your house, again, meaning the church house. And I have to say this, Brother Feaster, as well as a disclaimer. You know, we want everybody to understand that what we're going to be talking about tonight and how this comes out tonight, we're not advocating or proposing that anything be done, one, without hearing from God first, and two, that will be out of order for your house. Again, we're talking about the church house. Because think about it, if something is going to be done in without hearing from God and something that is out of order for your house, then everything is going to be in vain. It's defeating the purpose of what we're talking about tonight. So we definitely want everybody to seek God and to make sure that they are, that you are, the listeners, being in order. If you take anything that we say or if you have something that is stirring within you that you believe that God has communicated to you that your individual church house needs to do, just do it the right way, and the right way is doing it God's way. Amen. Let me go here. I appreciate everything that you said about Hezekiah, and I'm telling you, when you said that last week, Brother Feaster, it resonated, and it's been something that's just been really in my mind. And if you think about it, Hezekiah, he had a relationship with God. Hezekiah was one of, you know, there were several, quote-unquote, good and bad kings in Judah. And one of the things that I read about Hezekiah was that he had more zeal for God than any of the other previous kings before him. So when I heard you say that, and just having that little bit of knowledge about who Hezekiah was, that thing about his relationship is really what put him in a position to actually go to God like he actually did. And I don't know if I told y'all, we had one of our listeners that contacted us, I don't know if it was before the shutdown or right after the shutdown had occurred, but they were concerned about not being able to pay their rent. They were concerned about being put out of the place where they were living because they were unsure about how long the shutdown would last. If you remember about 2 weeks ago, I think we had a show that was called Economic Certainties. But the place where this caller lives is a place where pretty much everybody's getting Social Security. So we can understand and really feel that this person had a general concern because of that reason. And not only that, because they depend on that Social Security for their financial survival. And one of the things of encouragement, the things that we were able to be able to communicate is just what you said, Brother Feaster, what is it that you're working with? So if I had to try to put it into PRF language, you know, if you've been paying your mortgage on time every month and something happened like that government shutdown that just ended yesterday, or really today, so to speak, if you've been paying your mortgage, I really think that that person would not have a big problem going to the mortgage company saying, hey, this is what's going on. I need some grace.
Right.
Person has been paying their car note. I don't think that person should have a problem going to the person who owns that note saying, hey, you understand what's going on right now. When it comes back up, I'll pay you. I remember my mom used to do this back in the day. Everybody knows I grew up in Philly. And we had stores on every corner, and they were ran mostly by Chinese folks and down in my neighborhood. And my mom used to send me to the corner store, as we called it, and used to say, Nate, go get me $2 worth of bacon, like on a Saturday morning, or $1 worth of ham, $1 worth of cheese. Now, you would think that that's not a lot of money, but my mom used to send me down to the store with no money. And she used to tell me to tell Mr. whoever he was, that my mom will pay him on Friday when she gets paid. And I promise you, that man never turned us away. There had to have been some type of, one, relationship there, and there had to have been some type of business acumen that my mama had, meaning my mama had to take care of him every time she got paid or every time she asked for that grace. So when we talk about setting your house in order, we're not talking about creating all these new things. It's just doing like you just mentioned also, Sister Adia. Let's look at what is it that we have going on. Let's look at what position we're in right now. And if we're not in the right position is what I'm advocating. If you're not in the right position where you can't send your child down to the corner store to say, pick up X, Y, and Z, and Mr. Owner of the store, my mom is going to pay you on Friday, and they're cool with that. If you're not able to do that, then maybe that says something about the relationship that you have with that individual, or maybe it says something to you about a trust that you may have broken with that individual where they don't trust you to do that. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
That's kind of
go ahead, bro.
That's kind of what I was, as you were talking, I was thinking about that because, you know, when your mom sent you to the store to Mr. Bob, you know, and you had no money, and you brought the stuff back, what Mr. Bob had was a credit report from your mom. What do I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do I mean by that? You know, mom came into the store before you went in there. A few times, and
mm-hmm.
faithfully paid for items. Probably, and I'm very sure, mom had a very cheerful disposition. And so when it came time to when mom needed to do what mom does and take care of my children, but yet I don't have the money today to take care of my children, Mr. Bob looked at the faithfulness of mom and had no problems helping mom out. You didn't bring a note in, and I'm sure,
right.
You know, you may not even remember that was your mom. But because of her faithfulness, you know, and a lot of times as to what burdens me and what bothers me, and by no means am I telling anybody out there that I'm a politician. I am far, I really don't know enough about politics. I wish I knew a lot more, and that's my fault for not really paying attention. But I will tell you this, I know enough to be dangerous. I know enough to know that I'm going to vote when it's time to vote because that's my right. That's my right. But it burdens me and it bothers me when people say it's too much corruptness in the government, I'm not voting. Well, the solution is you have the ability, you have the right to make a difference. There's a guy that I work with. There's a guy that I work with who's on local council. And I didn't know the guy. His wife worked with us before, and she got a promotion and went to another job. And so now he works with us. I knew of him through her. But now working with him, he's the guy that I would have no problem pushing higher and higher and higher in office, because his integrity is so high now at the city level that I have no issues if he ever make it to governor. And that's where a lot of us, you know, when we sit there at the presidential election, which probably 90% of Americans, the only time they vote every 4 years, and we sit there between best case, worst case scenario, which one is the better, the less of the two evils, you know, we're sitting there like we're powerless because I don't have a vote. I mean, I ain't got but two choices. You had a choice before they got to the presidency. You had a choice when they went to city council. You had a choice when they – actually, truth be told, you had a choice when they raised their hand. They wanted to be the student guy, student governor. How did they SGA, I don't even remember that in school anymore. It's been so long. That's where it all starts. That's where it all starts. And because I ain't voting for them, I ain't voting for them, they ain't going to do nothing for me anyway. You're exactly right. They're not going to do nothing for you because you're not doing anything for them. You're not stopping them. You're not voicing your opinion. Their job is to speak on our behalf. So I said all that to say, you know, it's faithfulness that gives us that credit. It's faithfulness that puts us in a position. It's faithfulness. That's a lot of times, that's all it is. We get upset and we get frustrated because we don't see the faithfulness or the faithfulness that they're displaying we disagree with. So that's really what, you know, the big deal is in most cases. We need to have something to bring. What are you bringing? What have you been faithful in? That's my whole argument for tonight, David True. What have you been faithful in? What are you bringing to the table? What do you have? What are you putting up? I'm done for again, sorry.
It is perfectly fine.
Oh, man.
You know, one of the things that you said, Brother Feaster, that I think let me go back to something for those who are just joining in. I think I want to go again back to last week, because at the end of last week's show, we really just scratched the surface around two words. One of the words was set, and the other one was order, which came from the scripture that we read out of 2 Kings chapter 20. And I can't remember if we said it, but I do know that I had it down in my notes that the word set means to position, to begin, even to readjust. So as we were talking about setting your house in order, again, with my earlier statement, it's not about that everything is all wrong. It's not about your house is broke. It's not about there's nothing that is going good. It's not about that. It may just be it may just need a readjustment for a particular area of the house. You know, I'm big on people that just put these broad brush strokes across everything. And y'all know how I feel about that term we as well. Well, we who? You know, I had a cat in the barbershop that tried to say, preachers. I said, who are you talking about? Well, a preacher. I said, well, I'm a minister. You talking about me? He was like, yeah. I was like, really, dude? I said, but you can't have, and this is what I said, you don't have the courage to call out the name of the one you're talking about. Is it really one that really hurts you? But you want to put everybody in a bubble. You see what I'm saying? So the same thing with the house. The whole house. There's nothing wrong with the whole house. There may be just something. You may need inside of the house to paint one room. That doesn't mean your whole house has paint chips all over the place and it just looks bad. And the other part of what we talked about last week was order. I want everybody to hear this. Order does not mean perfection. Order does not mean something has to be 100%. But it does mean structure. It does mean stability. Think about it. When we go to the book of Acts, there was the first instance where there was 120 men and women that was in the upper room that were saved or received salvation, received the Holy Ghost. Let me say that, excuse me. And then if you go on to the next chapter, there was 3,000 that got saved, that believed. But it was more than 3,000 people there in Jerusalem for the day of Pentecost. I don't read where God said, there's at least 8,000 of y'all here. All of y'all should have received this word. Should have received this message. And that he was upset about that. Nah, it was up to the people. It was up to those apostles. It was up to those other disciples to keep the momentum going, to do what God had called them to do, and let God deal with the rest of them. It's a God thing anyway when you're dealing with the heart. So I really want everybody to really focus on that, that it's not about, when we're talking about order, it's not about being 100%. It's about being the best that you can possibly be. And, again, we're talking about from shutdown to recovery. That's where we're heading if we can get there for the rest of the show tonight. What are we going to do when we talk about recovery? So here's what was revealed to me, and I want to communicate this in the right spirit. I want everybody else to hear it in the right spirit, and if you're listening, we want you to respond. We want to hear what your thoughts are as well. This is what God said to me, y'all. If you take care of each other, people outside of the body will witness this, and it will provide an opportunity for the verbal witness for Jesus Christ, and then the body will grow. I don't know who that's for. I don't know what house that's for, but what I'm praying is that that word that God gave to me, whoever it's for, that they will just take it and take it and just embrace it and use it. I want to also just hit on something that you talked about, Brother Feaster, when you was talking about responsibility. And Adia, Brother Feaster, if y'all want to jump in, because, again, we're just having dialogue. We're just having conversation. We're just sharing the things that have been placed on our hearts, y'all. And we want you to be a part of this conversation as well. We talked a lot about responsibility. And if your church does more than preach on responsibility, if they're preaching it at all, Isaiah said, my word goes forth out of my mouth, and it will not come back or it will not return void, but it's going to accomplish everything that I please, I being God, and it's going to prosper all the things that it was sent to. So I think the people, if the people allow that to take root in their hearts, then the evidence is going to be fruit. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the fruit of acts for responsibility to be seen. If people can't see that the church house is acting in a responsible manner, if the people cannot see that the things that are going on by the people that are inside of the church house are not of a responsible manner, are not of a loving type of nature, then why do they want to be a part of us, bro? Why? So, again, set your house in order, getting us on this road to recovery. I had to keep talking about it because just because the government shutdown ended yesterday, this is what God was telling me. It's not over. Do you realize that there may not have been people that actually lost their checks, but there were people that did not get their checks? There may have been somebody who, some people that work for our federal government that didn't have to go through the furlough but still going to work. They're going to still get their check on time. But I don't want people to think because the government came together or the two entities of our government came together and said, yeah, we have a thing and we're going to open this government shutdown. It's going to end and now we're going to open and people can go back to work. There's people still living with uncertainty. There's people that still had to go to work and spend money to get to work that they really didn't have. There's people that may have made some decisions because they didn't know how long this government shutdown was actually going to last. Can we think for a minute about some individuals that are out there that said, you know what, I don't know how long this is going to last, and they may not have been of our level of faith, and may have went out and got a title pawn, went out and got a loan from a loan shark, went and used their credit and paid for some groceries because they didn't have any money in the bank. If the church is not trying to deal with, if my church, let me just say it, I have to say what I tell you, Brother Feaster, all the time. If my church is not willing to deal with these things, there's something wrong. Y'all keep me straight, y'all. My church cannot just be of a mindset and of an attitude that because we only have three people that work directly for the government, that as long as those three people get taken care of, that everything else is cool and that God is pleased with that. What about the rest of the people that come to the church that you don't know are dealing with the same thing? And what about all those individuals that were depending on the government to cut some checks for their businesses and services that they'd already rendered? What about the local communities that depended on individuals, again, around a military town in which we live, all three of us?
Mm-hmm.
It's not over. Brother Feast, I'm glad you're saying what you're saying, and you know I don't play the politics very well, I guess, but I'm glad you're saying what you're saying, because if people do not take action, and I'm talking about, again, the road to recovery, we got to talk about, okay, what's going on? What state are we in right now? I really don't want, this just came to me, I really don't think that there's any room for anybody to say we're mad if you're Republican. Really? And I don't think there's really any room for a whole bunch of rejoicing if you're a Democrat. Because the bottom line is they had people going through a bunch of mess, a bunch of uncertainty and all of that. For what, 16 days? I know people that was furloughed that I didn't even know they were furloughed. That's what we want people to be like.
Can I get a personal experience of what happened during this furlough?
Go ahead.
This is what happened to me, just so that, you know, I'm not trying to put my business out there. I just want to show you that there were people that were affected that may have been to your left and to your right, and you just may have not known. The day the furlough started, I had an appointment to turn in some paperwork for my son. And what I did not, because what I read, everything that I read, this is why I'm not, well, this is why I really don't really pay a whole lot of attention to the news. I watch it, but I take it with a grain of salt. But what everything that I read said that VA civilians, DOD civilians, will be able to work during the shutdown. Military was going to get paid and DOD civilians. So I go to work the next day, and I'm like, all right, it's going to be business as usual. It was not business as usual. I started getting emails and phone calls because of my position and what I'm doing. People were worried that they wasn't going to receive the training and get what they wanted. So I started getting emails and phone calls about all these people that at 12 o'clock, they were going home. And so my whole morning was geared toward taking care of some other personal stuff that I need to do. But now I got to get on the phone and call my higher headquarters to find out about what they're saying. Because I didn't know that these people were getting furloughed at noon that day. I had an appointment at 1 o'clock. I said, let me call to see if they're open. They were shut down. The lady, when I finally got, the phone was kept being busy. When I finally got through, I said, I have an appointment at 1 o'clock. It's 12:30. I'm on my way out the door, and I'm calling to check and see if I can come and submit my paperwork. The lady said, no. I said, so let me guess. I cannot even set up another appointment until everything blows over. She said, yes, sir. We cannot even schedule another appointment. So this one little appointment that would have only taken about 20 minutes, all I had to do was, matter of fact, they already had my paperwork. I just had to go in there and meet with, a.k.a. the provider, the counselor. I'm not sure exactly what that person's title is. That's all I had to do, and the paperwork was to be submitted. Because I was not able to do that 20-minute session, it has done a ripple effect, and now I have so much stuff in the air. Now, everything, I'm still going to work. I'm still doing everything that I'm supposed to do, but this one thing is pending in the air, and I have no idea when I can go in. Now, I mean, now I'm almost certain I can call tomorrow, but I have no idea not only when I may get another appointment, because now the last 16 days of appointments have been canceled, and every last one of us are trying to get rescheduled. Now, every day it gets closer to the deadline that I have to turn this paperwork in. Mm-hmm. And if I don't turn this paperwork in time, the situation that's going on is going to erupt and blow up, and here I am going to be standing there not knowing what to do, and nobody can help me, and it's none of our fault. None of our fault. A lot, and I've, and this is one story, and I'm not going to hold the mic. This is one story of plenty that soldiers know of and soldiers have, because although we got paid, a lot of people that, because what they've done is they put people in position so that when we leave, that there's contingency, that people still can receive help. Because just because I leave, that don't mean that I the people that didn't go can't receive service. A lot of those services that, you know, you as civilians can go and not worry about because they're, you know, they're their own private business, their own practice, were cut off. Were cut off. So although we are going to work and we're doing what soldiers do, you know, we're being obedient, we're being faithful, we're due to honor and country and all that good stuff, there was nothing to make me smile about going to work. And that's a figure statement. I smile. I love my job. But all the amenities that was designed to take care of me were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. The only thing I had was a job. I had to continue to push through a mission when half the people I needed to talk to were not even there.
Right.
But the date that the mission is to happen is still going to happen. So the question my soldier kept asking me is, nobody's here. What are we going to do? We're going to call somebody else because on the 13th of November, this is going to happen. Well, who can I call? Well, try to call this person. Try to call this person. Try to get somebody so we can have something for this day. It's not that we're trying to put on a show, but we, I mean, the old phrase that I heard years ago, one monkey don't stop no show. We got to find another monkey. Let's keep going. Oh, we don't like this music? Change the music. So a lot of things, something as simple that we don't really pay attention to, yes, it's a ripple effect. It has rippled through the entire service. Every last one of us has felt this effect. There are people that can't PCS. There are people that can't get out of the Army. There are people that can't go to certain appointments that they've been waiting on for a long time. There are people that can't go and see a counselor because all these things were shut down, all of them. So when we're sitting here and we're talking and you hear me saying all this stuff, there's some stuff behind it that's driving the passion that I have. My job is to defend this country. That's my job, and I've been doing it for 21 years. That's my job. All I ask is if I go to work every day to train to defend this country, if I go and fight the wars to defend this country for the American dreams, for the red, white, and blue, all I ask is for you to do your job. I don't care if you're the cashier at Walmart, because I'm giving you that right to be there. I'm protecting that right to do that. I don't care if you're that grumpy person at McDonald's. I'm protecting that right. All I ask is that you do what you're supposed to do, because I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to protect and defend the right that you have. And that's what's upsetting me. We're not doing our job. So the ones of us that are doing our job, thank you. Thank you very much.
I got you. And let me tell everybody why I really did not have a problem with Brother Feaster saying and expressing himself. Again, we're talking about from shutdown to recovery. If we are not willing as the church to listen to folk that are going through things, how do you know how to help them? If I don't take the time to sit down and listen to what you have to say, how do I know what's going on with you and how to pray for you? Again, this is about us as the church setting our church houses in order. Sister D, I know you've been waiting patiently, so we're going to come to you and let you go with it for a few minutes.
Yeah, I just, you know, Feaster said something that kind of led me into say something that I really was not going to say. Sitting here at Command and General Staff College, and, you know, we hear a lot of different briefings from senior officers, from general officers, what have you. Very glad to hear their experiences and what they're doing and, you know, where, you know, just where the Army is and all of that. But in that, you get the opportunity, I guess, every now and again to where people will, I guess, quote unquote, say that they're using something that they say to speak as an, to be an example. But the reality is that you hear what people are saying and you can already kind of sense that that's what, how they really feel. And I'm saying that to say, based off of what Feaster was saying, you know, about people doing their jobs, as an American citizen, as an American citizen who is in the Army, as an American citizen who exercises their right to vote as an officer in the Army, I think it's so imperative that when we're looking at from shutdown to recovery, that people understand what their rights are. And I say that because when you hear people say things such as they don't vote because they are their job is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, they are apolitical, that they can't take sides, that they can't have an opinion, I beg to differ. When we look at how this shutdown has impacted so many people's lives, even soldiers, Marine, airmen and women, our Navy men and women, our Coast Guards, Peace Corps, this shutdown did not just impact everyone else except the military because we still got paid. It affected us, like Feaster said, with not even being able to take a medical appointment, where families could not go to the commissary, where families, you know, couldn't get doctor's appointments, different things like that. But when you have people say how they don't vote because they are apolitical, I guess what upsets me is that, one, you even said that in front of an audience. Two, because of your position, you said that in front of an audience. And three, the fact that you said that, but you still are an American citizen, and sometimes we act as if things do not impact us because we are supposed to support and defend the Constitution, yet we don't understand that when we don't vote, it doesn't just not impact us, but a lot of the legislation and the bills that come into play, they don't come into play or are not effective when that current president is in office. It comes into play when the next president comes into office. So
that's right.
I know I'm sounding like I'm ranting and raving. I'm venting, but I thought that it was just very fit and proper for the rest of America to understand how important it is to vote, because you have people that are in positions of authority and influence, whether it's negative or positive, that are basically stating what their opinion is about voting and are sharing that information with other people. And whether or not, if they're doing it to influence how someone may view voting, and the fact is that I have a family, I have children, I have neighbors, I have family and friends that if I don't vote at not the federal level where we're talking about voting for the president, but if I don't vote, if you don't vote at the state and local level, then we are basically giving up our rights for our children to have a good education, because I do know that this past year and last year they closed down thousands of schools all across America. Chicago and Pennsylvania were hit the worst from what they had on the news. Not only that, but it basically impacts the taxes that we pay. And not only that, but this shutdown and going on the road to recovery is so important that people who don't vote, that are in the military, whether they're enlisted or officer or warrant officer or not, what have you, even if they're a DOD civilian, because they also have an oath. It is so important that we vote at the state and local level, because the impact on that is that we are basically being the voice for people who probably don't understand what they just voted for and how that vote is going to impact their lives directly or indirectly or positively or negatively. And so when people say, oh, I don't vote, but still they want to have an opinion about taxes being too high, the cost of living being too high, sales taxes, why education is the way that it is, remember that if you do not vote, if you do not exercise your right, you are not just hurting yourself, but you are hurting your community. And so I just thought that as we go onto this road of recovery, that we understand that we have a part to play. We have a part to play in the bigger scheme of things, not just for ourselves, not just for our children, but for the community, for our local churches, for those nonprofit organizations. And so I'm going to end right there, but if you would be so kind, if you're on the line listening or online listening, if you would press 1 on your dial pad, we would love to hear what you have to say, because as we go from, and I want to throw this in there, like Joseph, as we go from the pit to the palace, from the shutdown to recovery, it's imperative that we keep not just us and what we got going on or don't have going on, but it's important that we be that voice. And that's why if we don't focus on us and get our houses in order, we will be blind and oblivious to the fact of what the media is putting out there, how they're still calling it Obamacare when it is really the Affordable Care Act. We will be blind and oblivious and ignorant to the fact when people tell us that as officers that we should not vote because they don't vote, because that is the subliminal message that they're putting out there, even if they don't tell you directly or indirectly not to vote, that's what they're saying. And to understand that we have an inalienable right that is given to us not by the federal government but by God, to be the voice, to be an ambassador in the earth realm. And unless we do it, unless we lift up who Christ is, he says, how in the world can he draw people? We're not going to lift him up. So press 1 on your dial pad. Say what's on your heart, what's on your mind, so that we can continue to be on this road to recovery and can help somebody else along the way.
Why y'all do that to me? Why y'all have me trying to come behind all that? I might as well just end the show right now.
It was burning in my heart. I couldn't take it no more.
You know what? It is what it is. So since y'all started this, let me go ahead and just take it there. I'm going to be like you, Adia. You said you wasn't going to say it, but you're going to say it. So I think I just got to go and say it now. Here it goes. You know, have you ever heard that a church is like or is supposed to be like a hospital? And I'm asking this as a question to see if y'all have heard this before. If it was just me, then I can just say it's me, but... Have y'all ever heard that?
Yes.
I have. My father in the ministry really focused on that, yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope this don't step on his toes then, what I'm about to say. And if it does, it's all in love. Let me ask this question then. What type of hospital turns people away?
What type?
For whatever reason, this has been on my heart. I'm sick and tired of hearing pastors, fellow ministers, even believers say things like, we can't help everybody. Saying things like, if people learn that we were paying light bills or giving out money or giving out free this or free that, then there'd be people lined up outside the door or there'd be people lined up around the corner. And I had to say, like, duh, really? If people was lined up outside the door, then isn't that one step to them being closer to being inside the doors? I can't imagine a hospital saying to somebody, we don't have enough chairs in the waiting room, so we need you to go to another hospital or to go somewhere else. Again, I'm still on topic, everyone. I'm still on from shutdown to recovery, because these are the things I can say that some of the churches, I can say my church and I can say a couple others, but I'm not. But I know it's relevant in the community that I live in. And I know what I'm hearing. I'm hearing by people that I respect their positions as pastors and ministers and even as believers. But there's a movie called In Too Deep, and I don't know how many of you have actually seen this movie. Mm-hmm. But it's a movie with LL Cool J and Omar Epps, a few years old. But there's a scene in this movie where LL Cool J is the kingpin, the drug dealer in Akron, Ohio, based on a true story. And his name is God. And, of course, we're going to say little G, right? And he's doing this big thing where he's feeding everybody during Thanksgiving. And here comes one of his young soldiers, one of the young guys in the game, that comes up to God and says, look, I'm tired of all these freeloaders. Everybody got such and such over there trying to get two and three plates, and this person over here asking for this. And God grabs the old boy and he says, look, any freeloader, any bum on the street, any mother, somebody from another state that wants something to eat, they better get it, and you better make sure that they get it. So when I, again, thinking about this analogy of a hospital, what I saw in that was you're dealing with two different mindsets. One, I would say, is of the world, and the other one is of God, talking about Big G now. The world would say no when God says yes. The world would make excuses where God would say, be creative and believe that he's going to make a way. And before you take that and run with it, when Jesus multiplied the fish and the loaves, it still came through human hands. So the point is God works through us to make things happen. And when he works through us to make things happen, what I believe is it brings glory and honor to God. So although my example is really dealing with physical provisions, let me throw this other thing out there. What if God didn't provide because he was getting too many requests from you and I? What if the joy that we're asking God for, he didn't give because Brother Feaster and Sister Adia had a request for joy already on the table? What if the hell that you're going through on your job, the peace that you're asking for, God didn't give it to you because 15 other people that's going through hell on their jobs had already made that request? What about sparing your life? There's a brother right now, a brother called me for another brother who was in a motorcycle accident yesterday that I got to go visit at the hospital, and told me that both of his legs, the bones in both of his legs have been crushed, and he's at the hospital here in the city. What if God doesn't respond to a prayer for healing because there's other people sitting in the hospitals and in the nursing home that are already with requests for healings? So, well, how about this? What about the greatest thing? What about him not giving you and I a chance for eternal life because there's others that have asked for eternal life and for salvation? This is what I heard from Adia, and I think I'm about through. You talked about from the pig to the palace, and I can just tell in my spirit that there was a whole bunch of people giving out high fives and clapping when you said that. From the pig to the palace, from shutdown to recovery, that was tight. When you mentioned what you mentioned about voting in the local and state elections, and then Brother Feaster mentioned what he was talking about from the federal level for the most part. When you mentioned, Sister Adia, about sharing information, what you mentioned, Brother Feaster, about writing letters to the political constituents, all of those things are not just individual things for you to get your individual house in order, for you to write about something because it directly affects you. I think everything that both of you have said are things that the church should be involved in.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%, my brother. Yes. I'm a co-sign. No.
Let me tell you this. For those cowards, y'all got me going there. For those cowards that don't want to talk about politics in the church, but at the same time, allow politicians to come in during election time? Come on. Again, we're talking about recovery. We're talking about setting our church house in order.
Yep.
You can't let the Republican come in there, Pastor, because you're a Republican, and not let the Democrat come in. You can't let the Democrat come in, Pastor, and not let the Republican come in.
Yep.
But you sure as heck don't need to let them come in during the service. I'm saying what I'm saying because I know that there is work to be done. I'm saying what I say, what I'm saying because I know that just because the government shut down and people showed up back to work today, that the effects of what we felt are not over. This thing is real, real simple for me, and I hope it's simple for you if you just receive it. What was God saying during these 16 days? To you as an individual and to you as a church. Just as the church represents the things in order of God, we must do what we can to make sure that these things that need to be done become a reality here on earth and in the lives of others. I say it like this. Sometimes you have to be that voice. When leadership is not. Sometimes you have to be that voice when leadership is unable or fearful. For us to have this conversation about what the church can do to set her house in order, we must all understand that none of us can get away from responsibility, personally and also as a collective body. I think I may be done. So, Sister Adia, if you have any final comments, please step back to the mic. Brother Feaster, if you have any final comments, go ahead and step to the mic.
I said a lot tonight, and honestly, I did not know. I guess I've been suppressing my feelings, but I did not know how passionate I was about this. But I've seen a lot of people's careers, you know, a lot of career schools that are needed for us to advance. People will sit home because of shutdown and don't know when they're going to be able to go back because, you know, everybody's now going back to the bottom of the list. But anyway, I said a lot tonight, and I just want to say that as we talk about the road to recovery, a lot of us can't see the forest for the trees. What do I mean? A lot of us are too busy talking about the Democrats, talking about the Republicans, talking about the president, talking about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare or whatever. A lot of people want to talk about a lot of things. Those are trees. Those are what I'm going to call distractors. We have to find out what we have that we can do. And this is my final comment right here. Jesus was talking to the people, and they were out in the desert, and the Bible says that they were weary because they was in the desert, and Jesus had been teaching all day, and it was becoming evening, and Jesus was filled with compassion. He looks to his disciple and he said, "What do we have?" And one disciple says, "Well, we ain't got enough money." Another disciple said, "Well, let's send them back to the town. Let them fend for themselves." And I'm so glad. You know what? Thank you, Jesus. I'm so glad he does not allow us to fend for ourselves. But
amen.
He looks to another disciple, and I applaud the disciple for what he said. But then again, I turn around and look at how he said it. He said, "We got a lad here. And all this boy got is a snack lunch." In other words,
two piece.
The disciple, one who was following God, one who was being taught by him, is not seeing what the little boy is bringing. All you're seeing is a little bit. But what the little boy did was offer up what he had.
Mm-hmm.
And what God did with all that that little boy had, and last time I preached it, I talked about how Jesus was looking at himself because the little boy gave up his lunch. He gave up all he had, the sacrifice. So Jesus saw himself in the little boy because the little boy gave up all he had, and Jesus saw himself going to the cross knowing he had to. That's just a part of a sermon. I wasn't supposed to get caught up. But anyway, all I want to say was, and I got caught up tonight, all I want to say was the little boy gave up all he had, two fish and five loaves of bread. He didn't know what Jesus was going to do with it. He didn't know what impact it was going to have on so many people. But yet he did what he could with what he had.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we get on the road to recovery. That's how we progress on the road to recovery. Thank you. God bless you. Those are my final comments. Anything else I got to say, I'm gonna post it on the Facebook page.
All right. I'm gonna come to you, dear. We got one caller that is on the line right now. Caller with last four 0155. Welcome to the PR table.
Thank you very much. I've been listening and I couldn't hold back any longer, and I just wanted to call in and say, you know, when I think about the road to recovery, I really think that a road to recovery is paved with active faith. Never before has there been such a need for us to do more than we talk about and do more than we say. And we learn to really lean not on our own understanding. You mentioned that, you know, with the shutdown, people have been out of work and displaced for the last 16 days. Well, I've been out of work for 8 months. And if it taught me nothing else about the road to recovery is you got to be active with it. You've got to get up off your chair. You got to get away from your pity party. You've got to step up, and all the scriptures and all the songs you've been singing, you've got to turn those into action.
That's
because
right.
That's the only thing that's going to get you through these difficult times. And like you were saying earlier, you know, if you have been in a good position where you've been paying your bills and doing what you need in advance, you have the power to negotiate and work out a deal with, you know, with your creditors and your bill for it. And it's true. You know, we have a lot more options than we give ourselves credit for. And we also forget about the benefits of having good character. Because if you have good character in challenging times, you will have access to resources that will allow you to sustain and to maintain through whatever this journey that God has you on for whatever reason he has. And I'm blessed to say that I have a job. I interviewed on Thursday, got the job on Friday, and started on Wednesday. And so it's a good thing, but I'm still recovering and getting back into the swing of things. So it's a process. It's an ongoing process. It's active faith when your foot is to the fire, and it's active faith when you get up off your feet and doors start to open, because you got to learn how to walk after you've been crawling for so long.
That's good. And I'm so glad that you – thank you, Carla. We surely appreciate it and bless you, and we're so glad that God has blessed you with this job. You know what? I think it's really, really good what our caller just said was she just echoed what I said earlier. Yes, the government shutdown is over, but there's still a recovery road that we're still on if we really, really think about it. Yes, she now has a job, but she's been out of work for several months. So she's still recovering. That's the type of honesty that my church needs to hear. That's the type of honesty that I believe your church needs to hear. And more especially, that's the type of honesty that you as an individual needs to hear. So with that, Sister Adia, we're going to come to you and let you go ahead and give us your final comments as we get ready to push the chairs back in and go about our business for about another week.
Yeah, I just, you know, and I know this is one of our favorite words, but it's really just a confirmation what you said earlier, or maybe, was it Feaster, but basically saying, what if God said that he could not do these things? And I had a conversation on Monday with a friend of mine who had sent me a message asking me, you know, what was wrong with her? And I had no clue. But what I realized, and it ties into what our caller just said, is that a lot of times the problem with us, with me, is that we are not trusting God. If you have to ask the question, what's wrong with you, to someone else who is not there with you 24/7, who doesn't know every thought that you have that runs through your mind, who doesn't know your heart, the only thing that I could come up with, or not even come up with, but what God gave me to tell this young lady was that you can't love the things that the Creator has put on this earth for us to enjoy more than the Creator himself. And a lot of times that's what our problem is. We want the stuff, and we desire it so much, but we forget that without God, we can't have those things. And so this is leading me to the last thing that I'm going to say before I end it, is that if we are not trusting God, if we are not actively walking by faith instead of by what we see, then we will always live a life of uncertainty, because we know we live in an imperfect world. But for believers, we have a God that we can trust and who will walk us through every process of our life if we would allow him to. And so the last thing that I want to end with is a poem that my friend recited to me over the phone a couple of weeks when I was having a hard time just saying, you know what, God, I don't know how I'm going to get through school because I'm not academically up on my best. And it's a prayer that we have all heard before, but I never heard it in its entirety, and I really hope that this encourages someone. And it simply says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, taking as he did, H-E capital H, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. What changed my life, ladies and gentlemen, is being able to know that I'm going to live one day at a time, and that I, as a Christian, that I don't look at this world to change it to the way that I want it to be, but I look at this world through the eyes of God to say that, Lord, you know what? I don't want to just take it as it is, but I want to take it the way that you would have it to be. And whatever that is, God, and however I fit into that plan, then that's what I want to be doing, and that's what I need to be doing. And so when we look at this serenity prayer, when we look at our role that we have as believers in the earth realm, we got to know that we got to live one day at a time, and that God will definitely lead us and direct us in every path that we need to be on. He will strategically place us where we need to be a help and a blessing to those that we need to be a help and a blessing to. And again, I just thank you so much for always this opportunity every Thursday to be a voice, to be a vessel that can speak to the hearts and people of God, and to speak to the hearts of people that want a change and that are looking for that change, and they may not know how to get it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adia. We love you. We want to just thank all of our listeners who have joined with us. And again, come back next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday. We would love to have you. We thank our caller that provided that. Sometimes we don't need a lot of people talking. Sometimes we only need a few. Sometimes we only need one. So we, again, thank our caller. If there was ever was a time that we needed you, you, capital Y, meaning God, is now. If there ever was a time when you, capital Y, needed us, it's now. If there ever was another time that we need each other, it is now. If you think about 9/11 in New York City, if we think about Hurricane Sandy up in New Jersey, if we think about Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana, all of those things were critical times in our history. They affected, they may have affected us some of us more than it did others. But in all of those instances, the one thing that is a constant among all of them is that there was a recovery period and is a recovery period. And even going back to 9/11, there's still some recovering that is still taking place. So, again, my prayer is that we just remember that we're on a road to recovery and that we have to do some rebuilding to get this thing back to the way that we believe and know that God would want us to be, and that's living in community with one another and giving glory and honor to him. So until we meet back again next week, God bless you. We love you. And just think about this next song I'm going to play. It's from J. Moss. It's called Rebuild. Just think about the words of this song as you listen to it and allow God to show you what you need to do to set your house in order to get your house on the road from recovery back to recovery. God bless you.
Sometimes I'm cold. Sometimes I'm hot. Sometimes I'm prayerful. And other times I'm not. Sometimes I feel like giving up, yeah. Sometimes my face feels used up. And every time I get in a bind, I know you're there. Perfect man.